Hey guys, just a quick note. As some or all of you know, I am Ukrainian-American. I was born and raised in Ukraine. And so in my business sense and my hard attempt to support freedom and to stand with Ukraine, my company, U2Shine, has launched a line of products where 100% of the profit goes to buy much needed supplies for Ukrainian people and then ship them without overhead, without any cost, all run by volunteers who are close clients and friends on both here in US to acquire supplies and then in Ukraine. With that, if you would like to participate in this effort, please go to store.u2shine.com, and that is store.u2shine.com. With every product that you buy, the profit from that product goes 100% to support Ukraine. Please wear the gear with pride and share the word. Thank you so much, and much love to you as you stand for freedom, as you stand for peace, and as you stand with Ukraine.
In the world of many internal and external voices, the voice you listen to is the voice that dictates your life. Would you like to discover a clear path to a life of freedom and fulfillment? Then welcome to All About the Voice podcast, where we focus on awareness, alignment, and action in order to live a life of abundance. I am your host, Victoria Rader.
Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, love, dating, and relationship expert, proposes that everyone deserves a healthy love relationship. Having experienced a lot of turmoil and overcoming in her own life, she has come to understand and empower women to attract and create healthy soulmate relationships. Here is Lynn, a voice for masculine and feminine energies.
All right, and here with me after a little bit of a technical hiccup, which seems to become a part of these gorgeous interaction, is a soul that is becoming, I believe, a dear friend, a heart full of love, amazing Lynn Smith. Lynn, welcome to All About the Voice podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, Victoria. I'm very happy to be here and very grateful for your listeners listening to what we've had to share today.
All right. Lynn, you know, I got to know you a little bit, and a lot of us read about different ways of having a soulmate. We study it, we teach it, but I think you've lived it. I think your life has been this gorgeous book of a manual of a genuine heart. Like if I were writing a book and I will, and I'd say a manual on a genuine heart, you know, by Lynn Smith. So talk to me a little bit about this heart path that you've walked, and I will pause you with questions as the story unfolds.
Okay. Well, just to give people a bit of a warning, my personal story is quite a harrowing one, but I think it's quite relevant to my journey. So just a bit of a heads up that it's adult content coming up. And it really started for me at the age of 15. And I really had a very, very bad experience where I was seriously sexually assaulted. And there was no other word to explain it other than I was raped. And at that moment in my life, I was a virgin by a trusted adult who was quite a lot older than me. And needless to say, it had a very profound impact upon me because this happened in the 70s. And in those days, children were very much seen and not heard. And my own parents weren't in a position whereby I had a close relationship with either of them. And so I just suppressed it and never told anybody about what had happened to me. And just about to get over all of that, when at the age of 18, I had another similar experience, but not with the same guy, different means. It was a date rape type situation where he drugged my drink and took advantage. And same thing, you know, where I was left traumatized, but not in a position where I felt I'd got a voice and was able to tell anybody about what had happened to me.
At what point did you actually have help? At what point have you been able to be supported enough where you addressed that pain and that trauma from the teenage years?
Not until the age of 42. This was literally, I think, inspired because at the time, my oldest daughter was going through puberty. She was about 11 or 12 years old at the time. I wanted to be able to tell her and my other daughter, who was 2 years younger, and my husband, who didn't know anything about my past, about what happened to me, because I wanted them to be able to feel they could confide if they was ever in a dangerous situation, you know, either themselves or with their friends.
And in what form did the help come?
I contacted, in the UK, it's called Rape Crisis, and I rang them up and arranged an appointment. So this is me at the age of 42. So many decades later, I felt ready to speak. Had the initial consultation with the counsellor, and she says, I'm at the end of the conversation, she said, I'm ever so sorry. She said, unfortunately, there's a 12 to 18 month waiting list for any ongoing counselling. So you can imagine, here's me all these decades later, finally ready to speak, finally ready to go on my healing journey. And I get told that.
Lynn, what do you think keeps us in that, you know, paralyzed state? Like when something, and the numbers of women and men, by the way, and men who are victims to assault and rape are so huge. You know, they're beyond my comprehension as more and more light is shed on that. And so what do you think keeps us as humanity in that frozen state?
I think it's naturally, you know, within our DNA to respond with the, I think most people have heard of the fight or freeze response. And for me, you know, it was a freeze response the first time at 15. The second time, I didn't have the option of a fight or flight, you know, I was just incapacitated. So, you know, it was like a similar experience to the first, in that it felt like an out-of-body experience because I knew what was happening, but I was just immobile and not able to stop it from happening. So I think it's just our own body's normal, natural response to any severe trauma that we go through.
Mm-hmm.
Except in this day and age, it isn't saber-toothed tigers that are around the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, it is these sorts of dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm. And going back to that 18-year-old girl, what was your response or reaction to the event?
It left me feeling suicidal, you know, and I was in a position where I could actually do it, because at the time I was a veterinary nurse. I'd moved out my family home and was living in the flat above the surgery where the veterinary surgery was. And I can remember distinctly going down to the poisons cupboard. I knew where the keys were kept. I knew which was the drug that would kill me. I got as far as opening the cupboard door, taking the drug off the shelf, which I knew would definitely kill me. And it was the thought of my younger brother that actually stopped me from actually going through with it.
Amazing. You know, years ago, I've kind of done this beautiful video that was Take Your Life to Live It. I think very often we get to a point in life when we feel there is such a huge absence of control that taking your life is the last kind of point of control. And so at that moment, I think if you take it to live it, and in your case, it was taking it to live it for your brother, probably not for you, but not to harm him. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It certainly was, because I can remember, you know, growing up, we didn't really have a very close relationship, my brother and I. But at the time that this was going on, my mum had just left my dad. So we didn't know where she was. My dad wasn't a drinker, but he'd started drinking, you know, because my mum had left and he didn't know where she was. So he was going through a traumatic time. And then it was the thought of my brother, you know, having lost his mum. Mm-hmm. And also living at the family home at that time with a father that was very volatile and unstable. It was the thought of that that stopped me, because I thought I couldn't put this on him as well.
You know, that explains a lot to me, because love stopped you. Love stopped you and started breathing life into you. That's just a beautiful thing. So much so that now you have your own podcast of Hearts Entwined. And how does this 18-year-old girl, having lived through what she has, becomes a woman who says, you deserve to have a soulmate? How did that path of healing happens for one? I know it didn't happen overnight, so walk us through it.
Yeah, it literally started with me, I suppose, in my late teens and early 20s, having some very complicated types of relationships. I literally went through a whole spectrum. You know, I was one of those girls that went through a promiscuous phase. And I think, you know, it was on the back of that feeling of shame, unworthiness, not feeling love. and looking for love through sex, which I think a lot of girls do. You know, if you haven't had a loving home life, for example, that can be enough to set you on that path to being a bit promiscuous without going through any other trauma. But, you know, I think the trauma added in with that, you know, made me feel unlovable as well and sort of compounded that. So I did go through that promiscuous phase. I also went through a phase of attracting a lot of toxic relationships, but also good relationships, you know, with wonderful guys and young men in those days that would have been a good match for me. But again, you know, self-sabotaging those because of not realizing that I wasn't loving myself. And we have quite often not, we're living lives, aren't we? Not realizing that when we're not loving ourselves and not realizing we're having this negative self-talk and not feeling self-worth or value. And that happened for quite a few years until I was 26, nearly 27. And I met my now ex-husband, who was a very, very good man. But all I wanted when I met him was safety and security and protection. And I knew that he could give me that. You know, he loved me. I felt safe with him. I felt protected with him. And I felt very secure. And that was enough to keep me happy for 23 years. But within that relationship, you know,
I'm listening to your story and it actually is amazing to me because, yes, this, the pattern, I think, of freeing yourself to be loved is a very clear pattern because when somebody takes your body, the first level of freedom says, I get to choose who I give my body to. And that when you talk about that promiscuous stage, in a way, it's just saying, I'll show you, this is my body. Nobody's going to tell me what to do or not to do with it. And you're reclaiming the rights to that body. And when there isn't a high frequency of knowing how to do that, but then once you have gone through that, you say, now I'm free to keep my body. I don't have to be giving it away in order to own it. And that's when you seek that safety that you're talking about. And in your case, you found that safety and security. And now you're in a 23-year marriage, whether you said with a really good person, and yet you were not finding things in that marriage. What was missing in that relationship?
It was that passion and fulfillment and aliveness. But I mean, within that marriage, I was a totally different person, you know, because I was quite cold and rigid and, you know, desensitized to intimacy to a certain extent. You know, there was intimacy, but it wasn't, you know, around any lust and passion or, and I didn't realize until I started working on myself that, you know, I was contributing to that, obviously. You know, I was very much in my work is very much around teaching women about masculine and feminine energy and how that works because we all have that within us. But, you know, in opposite sex relationships usually our more dominant core energy if we're women is the feminine and the opposite for men, but it's not always the case, but usually it is. But you know, for me, I was very much more in my masculine energy because we default into that, you know, when we're feeling threatened. We default into that, you know, if we want to climb the corporate ladder quite a bit. And we default into that, you know, if we're in a competitive environment such as in sports, which is great and it's very useful. But if we're in that energy all the time in a relationship, what it does is affect the intimacy within the relationship because without really realizing it, you know, our men in those relationships are not attracted to that masculine energy. They want the feminine. And I'm not saying I wasn't ever feminine. Obviously, I was to a certain degree because my husband still loved me and found me very attractive. But, you know, my heart was closed. My heart wasn't open. That also contributed to the lack of feeling alive and passionate within that relationship.
Now, that's a fascinating thing. And I think for our family here to dig deeper into the masculine and feminine energy, I want to open that conversation a little bit and just kind of describe how you see feminine energy, how you see masculine energy. And obviously, as Lynn have said, it's very clearly every single human being is a combination of the two in the best and highest flow for them to walk their divine path. And so how do you see them? What is the purpose for the feminine? What is the purpose for the masculine in its classic high frequency and maybe in the drawback of when it's not healed and whole, you know, so that give us that framework. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think if you can imagine a heart rate monitor, And that you can see there's a line at the top of the heart rate monitor that represents masculine energy, and maybe a line at the bottom of the heart rate monitor that represents the feminine energy. It could be the other way around. It's just that I jokingly like to refer to the fact that I like the man on top. So I always say, you know, imagine that the masculine energy is the line at the top of the screen and the feminine energy is at the bottom. You can then see that there's a gap between the energies, and that gap is what creates the passion. So, you know, if there's a gap between the energies in your relationship, if you're very much in your feminine and he's very much in his strong, healthy masculine, then you're going to have a very alive, passionate relationship, because the more polarized the energy in your relationship, the more passion, the more chemistry, the more intimacy there is likely to be. Now, should those energies become more neutral, in other words, should there be more going towards the middle of that heart rate monitor screen, the masculine and feminine energies, where they're almost touching, then you've got a relationship which is almost just like a friendship, because there's no polarization. And that's what happened in my marriage. There was no polarization of energies in the relationship. We were both operating in very much in the middle, sort of gender neutral energy, to the point where it flatlined, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, so that relationship died because we're just settling for an okay friendship type relationship. There was no polarity of energies to create any passion within that. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. So if one finds themselves in that relationship, what other, I mean, in your life journey, the choice was shifting to a different partnership that was the healthiest way for you to proceed with your ex-husband. Is there a possibility for two people that love each other so and find themselves more friends than passionate lovers or passionate anything? Can they shift that energy? And if they can, what would be the steps of doing so?
Yeah, they can shift. I mean, I just didn't have the awareness at the time, you know, or the knowledge or the skills or experience that I've got now, mm-hmm. you know, at that point in my life, to be able to change things. So, you know, that only came later when I realized, you know, that perhaps if I'd got all this information within my marriage, I could have turned that relationship around and changed my energy completely and, you know, had the passion that I was craving within that relationship with my ex-husband. And I just wanted to clarify before I go on that there can be the toxic side, because in other words, you know, that there is like the healthy feminine energy and the healthy masculine energy. And there's also the unhealthy feminine energy and the unhealthy masculine energy. So you can have a passionate relationship, but it can be a really toxic relationship. It can be a really codependent relationship. Because, you know, one partner is in the unhealthy masculine energy and one partner is in the unhealthy feminine energy. And usually the unhealthy masculine energy is the you know, the chauvinist pig, the jealous, possessive, controlling energy. And the unhealthy feminine is the very much the submissive, needy, desperate, victim type energy. They attract each other, and there is passion in that relationship, but obviously it's an unhealthy passion. So if you recognize that, you know, you have got passion in a relationship, but it's not a great relationship, then it's because you're in, you know, you're either in your unhealthy feminine or unhealthy masculine in that case. And what we're striving for is to get, you know, to have that healthy relationship where you've got the man or the masculine energy in his healthy masculine, you know, where he's the chivalrous, protective, you know, assertive, keeps you safe type energy, and you're the feminine in your sensual, you know, girliness and nurturing energy, which is the part of the feminine healthy side of things. So I just wanted to make that distinction for anybody that's thinking that, you know, I've got polarization or had polarization in a relationship, but, you know, it was a very toxic relationship or is a very toxic relationship. And so I just wanted to clarify that before I went on to explain how you can actually get into that energy that's going to create the passion.
Mm-hmm. And so take us right to it. I am ready to create passion.
Well, one of the biggest things is from the feminine, which is usually the woman in opposite sex relationships. For the feminine, if you know your natural core energy is you as the feminine in your relationship, is to relinquish control. And that doesn't mean you don't have boundaries. Of course you have boundaries. You have boundaries, you have standards, but you let the masculine, your man, lead the relationship. You don't need to take charge. You don't need to be criticizing, complaining, or doing things that are likely to emasculate him by your tone of voice or by wanting to be right all the time or being defensive. Those sorts of types of responses when we're communicating with our man can be perceived as very controlling and very masculine energies. And obviously, if you've got you in your masculine energy and your man's in his masculine energy, all he's going to feel if you're very confrontational is there's another masculine energy in the room, and he's not going to be attracted to that. It'll be like two stags butting horns. So if you have a lot of conflict in your relationship, it's because you're probably defaulting into masculine energy and not responding from a feminine perspective, which actually, you know, melts him, you know, because you can respond and just be equally as powerful in your feminine energy and it not create any sort of conflict, but create intimacy instead.
You know, it's fascinating. I used to teach the power kind of struggle example, and I would have two students stand up and I'd have one student raise his or her hands, and I'd ask the other student to raise their hands and start pushing on the hands of the first student. And they would start pushing, and of course the student would start pushing back, and they would stand in this pushing relationship, you know. And I would say, now, the instruction was not for you to push back, was it? The instruction was just for one to push. But we are built as human beings that if we are perceiving being pushed, we default into defense energy of masculine. We're going to push back. And then I would say, now, student number two that you're standing up, push on the hands of the student one. And now the student one could shift their hands and guide them anywhere they wanted. Because as the push comes, you can change the direction. It no longer is coming at you. You can redirect it. And it was such a visual thing, is that that's the difference between masculine and feminine energies as such, that it is not surrender, submit, and, you know, I'm a weaker sex. Not at all. It is guide versus, you know, it's the ability to guide versus ability to go. It's a go and guide. You know, they're both are very important in their dance. And it's not, once again, it's not to say that those roles are not interchangeable. For example, in some areas of my life, I lead with masculine energy. In some areas of my life, I lead with feminine energies, and it's opposing with my husband. We have this dance of where one steps in because, you know, naturally I'm better with money. So I'm going to lead there, you know, so and push and go and go and go. So anyway, that's a fascinating thing, Lynn. How do you help your clients when they come to you and they're seeking for that partnership, and you tell them, well, maybe you shouldn't have the last word every time? How do people react to that?
I think it's just a case of explaining that, you know, I've been there, and I just give them practical examples, such as, you know, I've been in a relationship where I've responded, you know, with, if he's been irritable, I've been irritable back, which then, you know, just escalates it. So, or I've been defensive, or, you know, I've responded back with, you know, I'm right attitude sort of thing. And what that does is, what I say is, you know, your man may be the instigator, you know, he might be irritable, and he might be the one that like what I call lights the fire. In other words, there's potential for conflict, but you've got a choice. You can either pour petrol or paraffin on that fire, or you can pour water on it. You know, which is your preferred thing? You know, do you want a full on blazing row, or do you want the intimacy to be restored? So, you know, if you're very challenging back to him, then he, you know, it's going to blow up. You know, one of the easiest things I do when I've diffused situations where there was a potential conflict is respond in a feminine energy. And there's a couple of examples that I use where, you know, the feminine energy is a great response. And one of them is to just give him a pouty lip. I don't say a word. I just stick my lip out. And just stand there, because when a man is just hearing his own voice being aggressive towards you, he'll beat himself up far more than you ever could by any sort of response. So if you, in the silence, give him the silence to hear himself saying what he's saying to you in his nasty tone of voice, and you're just standing where looking pitiful with a bit of a pouty lip. And I even go so far as to point at my pouty lip and I go, you know, and exaggerate it. You know, sometimes I'll burst out with laughter, depending on who the guy is, you know. But as I say, sometimes it's just about giving him that silence where he can hear what he's doing. Another trick is to just say, ouch, to whatever he's saying. So you're not responding from a place of irritability back to him or being defensive or trying to, you know, say you're wrong and I'm right. You're just letting him know that his words are hurting.
And well, that's and I a very think, powerful. Yeah, I think a tricky part is that when a person is at a point of aggression, you can't preach, teach, expand, or they're inaccessible. Their senses are inaccessible. You know their senses are inaccessible because they're making no sense. That would be, and it's like you said, it's what gets triggered in a partner, whether joining the senseless party or trying to bring sense back in. Now, from you telling the story, it seems to me that there is more responsibility for a woman to balance things out. Is that what you're conveying, or is that one side? And if there is another side, if there is, how would it look from a feminine side where a woman is an instigator? How does that look like? And what is a man to do? And once again, when I say man, woman, we're looking at the leading masculine feminine energy because it can be applied into all relationships. So how would that look like? So if it's a masculine energy, it's irritable, it's pushy, it's attacking. And then from feminine side, is it instead of counterattack, which leads to complete disaster, it's more like disarming, right? I'm going to disarm you. So what does it look like from the other angle?
I feel it's a case of, for men, they're just best to walk away. You know, for the woman, if the feminine in your life just gets into a masculine energy and is attacking you, the best thing a man can do is just say, I just need to go out of this situation and give the relationship time to cool off. But what I find is that because I work with women predominantly, because it is the feminine energy that usually, you know, 80% of people that seek self-help is the feminine, it's the woman usually, you know, whether it's to do with the relationships or mental health or any sort of self-help, it usually is the feminine or the feminine energy that seeks self-help. So it stands to reason, because we are that person that does seek help outside of us, men are more likely to process when they need help internally, you know, in a solitary way. Mm-hmm. So that's another difference between the masculine and the feminine energy. You know, when they've got a problem or a challenge, they tend to, you know, want to go into hermit mode and go into the cave and, you know, try and sort it out for themselves or ignore it until they have to sort it out for themselves. Whereas women are more likely to reach out, you know, to girlfriends or, you know, coaches or seek help through therapists or whatever, or in their community groups. So it's easier for the woman to get the help they need to change the relationship dynamic. So that's all I can say, is that I predominantly work with women for that reason, because they then have the tools, if they change, to then that positively impact the way that man responds to them as well.
You know, it makes perfect sense to me, you know, in terms of addressing how we process help. You know, my team and I were looking at just stats, and I would say about 80% of my live audience, seminars, clients for our team are women. But 80% of my blind audience on YouTube is men. So I have all of these incredible help videos and so forth. And it's fascinating. And very few of them are courageous enough to actually write a comment. But when you look at my YouTube, you'd say, well, my ideal client is a man, you know, that is seeking that deep. So it's so interesting that you're pointing it out, because I do think we as a society are still not welcoming. We're seeing masculine energy, men seeking help, as a sign of weakness, not a sign of strength. And I think until that shifts, a lot of enlightenment is to be brought around by women. Until our men say these three very strong words, I need help. We'll know we've arrived at the age of enlightenment when men march and say, we need help. Because like you said, it is women, isn't it? Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. But I think, like you say, there is going to be a shift, but we need to lead the way on that, you know, and show that it isn't a sign of weakness to reach out and seek help.
Yeah.
Because that's how that usually boys, little boys are brought up, isn't it? You know, and how they ridicule each other in the playground, and how the male role models respond to any sort of show of reaching out for help as being a feminine trait or a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us, kind of creating the soulmate package. What does one do or think, or how does one manifest that soulmate relationship in their life?
Yeah, I think it takes a good deal of work, because obviously, if you, depending on what stage of life you're at, certainly, you know, women now, you know, go through, well, we all do, whether you're a woman or a man, big life-changing shifts, usually around the 40s, 50s. You know, quite often that's when a lot of relationships break up and people get divorced and what have you, and or there's big career or health changes in their lives that changes the dynamics. So I think, you know, by that stage of life, you've had quite a few relationships, whether that's intimate relationships or not, to give you a fair bit of experience, but also a lot of baggage that needs healing. Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I do is identify what is the baggage you're likely to bring to another new relationship. And let's deal with that, get rid of that, release that, heal that. Because otherwise, what's going to happen is you're going to attract the same person. He's just going to be in a different pair of trousers, basically. And mm-hmm. you're just going to repeat the same cycles that perhaps mm-hmm. you've been repeating decades with another person or other people in previous relationships.
So step one is unpack.
Yeah.
Unpack. Okay. What is step two? I'm unpacked. I've let go of the heavy stuff. I've kept all the good equipment because there's good in every relationship. So then what do I do?
Yeah, there's lots of learning. You know, there's lots of learning, and it is healthy to see it as just learning rather than, you know, regret any of it. You know, regardless of whether you think they're to blame, you're to blame or whatever, it's just let it go. Whatever it was, just let it go and forgive yourself. Forgive any other previous parties that you pointed the finger at and said it was them, it's them, it's them. Because, you know, when we really do unpack it all, we do contribute to our whatever relationship we're in. You know, even if it's a toxic one and they're the one that's doing all the conflict within that, where you're contributing is allowing that. You know, mm-hmm. and accepting that and not getting out of that situation, and which sends a message to them then that it's behavior that you're going to condone. So we're all contributing in it. So it's about taking responsibility for what's happened, forgiving yourself and any other parties that were involved in any messy situations that you previously had, and then creating a vision about what you do want now. So you let go of the old stuff. So let's get to the present now. What is it you do want? Getting clear about what you do want, and not necessarily saying I want a 6'5" guy with blue eyes, designer stubble, and he's got to be working out at the gym 3 times a week and earning at least 150 grand a year. You know, it's not about...
No, I can't have that. All right. Oh, I get you. I get you. Thank you. Manifest things about, that matter.
Know, yeah. It's more about what you want in a relationship in terms of making what's going to help you feel safe, secure, your morals, your values, what common interests you might have, what you would find acceptable in terms of things like smoking and alcohol, those sorts of things, and what you wouldn't. And getting clear about, you know, what you want from a, you know, is it you want a monogamous relationship? Some people aren't bothered, you know, they're quite happy to go into open relationships. But, you know, you've got to be clear about what it is you do want.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think one of the things I advise for all of us to add to our list is that it's a person that you grow together with and not apart. That's just very important, that there is a potential and a desire for growth, because what seems to be a compatible relationship at a time, if there is no desire to grow together, eventually those will grow apart. And I think there's a role for those as well. But I'm kind of very big on, it is more fun to be growing with the same person because you do know all of their little quirks. You know, yes. You've learned to accept them and find them funny, you know. So, yeah, that very much so. Well, Lynn, listen, I always ask these last three questions at the end of the interview that I wanted to have you share with our All About the West family here. And the first one is, and then it might be at a time of that 18-year-old girl, it might be a different point in your life, but I want you to think of one point in your life that comes to mind where you need your wisdom and your support that you now have the most. And once you think of that moment, tell us what it is and what would be the advice that you would give that girl or young woman or child right now that she needs to hear.
I think it's, you know, having the faith to know that all will be well. And if it isn't well, and there's a great saying, actually, a great quote, which I often come out with all's well in the end. And if it isn't well, then it hasn't ended yet. Mm-hmm. You know, so trust that all will be well, because in the present moment, you know, usually we are safe and we are well. And it's only our mind that takes us into the past, you know, and starts then with the self-talk around any fears, worries or doubts that then puts us in, you know, a challenging negative frame of mind, or, you know, projects us into the future, which hasn't happened yet. So, you know, I always say, you know, just bring yourself into the here and now and know that all will always be well. You know, you will be and you are protected by mm-hmm. something bigger than ourselves. And beautiful. I'm not talking about, you know, from any religious context, because I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual person, you know, and I do believe that, you know, that there's a higher power within us as well as outside of us that is always there, that's always going to protect you, always going to protect you.
Yeah, and you know, often says that you can look at God as great overall designer through the eyes of what that means to you. If you're not the one having designed the universe, you might assume somebody has done it for you. And possibly through you as a part of that creation. And that's okay. Yeah. We can defer on everything else, but just realize I had a client who was, I was shifting the subconscious program from being watched, like being spied on and a lot of paranoia, to a genuine, I'm watched over. There is a loving energy. There is a loving creator and you are watched over and it's just unfolding through you. So I agree with you. Beautiful observation. So all will be well at the end. I have to tell myself that I'm actually Ukrainian born. So as my country's been torn into pieces, as we record this interview, every day I remind myself of that beautiful spiritual concept. All will be well. Do what you can now. And what I can now is expand peace spiritually while collecting money and supplies financially. And that those are the two things I can do versus a million things that I cannot do. So it can be applied. That concept is applied to every bit of our life, relationship, life, peace. So beautiful. Now,
yes.
I'm going
wish
to bring
for you, Karina.
Thank
I
you.
Wish.
Yeah. Now I'm going to bring this other Lynn from far in the future. She's going to come in and she's going to sit right by you. And this is you 20 years from now. What do you need to hear from her right now?
That we made a difference. And I don't need to sort of have any external validation around that. I just need to know that internally for myself, that we did impact whoever we was meant to impact to make the world a better place.
Beautiful. And finally, while there were a lot of beautiful gems on relationship from you today, if there was this one message, either a quote or a story or anything your heart desires truly to share with our family here, what would you want them to know by, remember you by, or learn from you the most?
I feel it's very important to understand how masculine and feminine energy works. And it's okay, you know, for us as women, if we are at our core natural self, to be a strong, powerful feminine energy. But, you know that your masculine energy is also there within you to serve you as well. But it's knowing that it's all context specific as to where it's beneficial to really enhance your life. So I just like to be known for, you know, helping people understand how masculine energy and feminine energy works in the context of relationships, for creating more love, more intimacy, and more passion.
Beautiful. And where can people learn those things from you? How do we find you?
I'm normally active on my Facebook page, which is Lynn Life Coach. Lynn just spelt with one N on Facebook. On my profile, you can connect with me there, or via the Hearts Entwined website.
Beautiful. And as always, I will have those links, you guys, in the notes to the episode. Lynn, thank you so much. In a non-romantic way, I feel our hearts are entwined. So thank you for sharing this space with me today.
You're very welcome, Victor. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me on.
This was Lynn Smith reassuring us that indeed, all will be well in the end. Enjoy more of Lynn's wisdom via her Hearts Entwined podcast. All links are in the episode notes.
This is All About the Voice podcast, and I want to hear your voice. What has been of the greatest value to you today? Share your insight and share this episode with others. All links are in the description. I also want to invite the voice of happiness into your life via our iHappy Daily and iHappy Me apps, our daily energy boosters. You can download these apps, including a free version of iHappy Me, from the Apple App Store or the Google Play App Store. for the Voice of Daily Encouragement, grow with us with our free My Tree of Life Facebook group. If you want to join us in exploring how you can live your life with more freedom, head over to youtoshine.com. That is YU2SHINE.com. I can't wait to get to know you and be a part of your journey of endless possibilities. Thank you again for listening to All About the Voice. I'm Victoria Rader, and I'll see you on the next episode.